the movies. It is the general idea that God is at work everywhere. If you have eyes to see and ears to hear, you can hear not just God speaking, but also the cries of humanity, the questions people have, the stories that are resonating in culture and in societies. Engage with what it is that the media, the movies, the TV shows, critically think through them, and not in a way where you're like critiquing them all the time, but in a way where you're engaging with them in a meaningful way. What is it about this that resonates with you? What's true about it? What's false about it? What are the claims of this that are not true? What are the things that are happening? We shouldn't turn our brain off. We shouldn't turn our spirit off. We shouldn't turn God off, ever. How do we begin to attune to stories that move us, why they move us, how we see God at work in the world? So this is a series kind of along those lines.
So welcome to the official episode one, past the intro of God at the Movies.
Right.
And we are going to start with The Last, literally The Last of Us.
The Last of Us. I've been churning through this. I watched this in like 3 days so that I could be as fresh on my mind. Actually, no, it's because I loved it. Spoiler alert, by the way, this is one of the greatest shows ever. So that's my takeaway. That's
well, and also spoiler alert in this, we are going to talk about the ending. So if you haven't seen all of it yet, too bad for you.
But please don't listen to this if you haven't seen it, because it's, I just feel the ending is really important and one of the things we have to talk about, and there's so much going on there. And if we ruin it, someone almost ruined for me by saying like just a thing, which I'm not going to say the thing. I'm just going to say someone.
Was it me? Did I say
it?
Oh, sorry.
I'll hold on what you said until, but I'm going to say we've given people enough time now that they're thinking, I might want to watch this show. Mm-hmm. I know. Danielle, do you like the show? It was a good show.
Yeah, I thought it was well worth talking about and fascinating. I watched it with my son, Zion, who we have invited as a guest on this podcast. So Woo! Welcome, Zion Court.
Hello.
Hey, we're glad you're here. And you're the one that wrote me into this show. And I'm glad. I'm thankful for it. And also, we watched it together and kind of had some discussions along the way. And one of the things that the show, maybe some people might not even know this, but the show is based on a video game that you were already very familiar with. And so that brought a dimension to watching the show that was new for me.
Yeah, it's fun to see like adaptations and, you know, what they think is really important to show in the show versus a game, different mediums.
Yeah, and so you were like on the spot going like, oh, this is new, or they changed this, or this is exactly how it was. No, in a really good way.
I got super obsessed with this and then started watching a bunch of the video game playthrough and then nearly bought it for my PC and then found out that the PC port is kind of busted, so I haven't bought it. But so I don't know if I want to spoil it or not, but I'm super into this show and super into this video game now, apparently. So.
All right. You're excited for season two.
I really am. Yeah, I'm not good at waiting for these things. So after watching all of it in 3 days, waiting a year or two is going to be hard. But
I do think that, well, we watched it as it came out, so we had to wait a week between episodes, like back in the throwback good old days when I was a kid. But Zion, I'm interested in your take on the video game genre versus the show. Do you have a preference? Do you think it ruined it? Did you think it enhanced it? What are your takeaways on that kind of? Because that's kind of one of the first things that's ever been done that way. I know there's been some movies based on video games.
Yeah. I think really the difference in medium provides a very different experience. A TV show, like what The Last of Us is, maybe 8 or 9 hours long. Each episode is kind of like a mini movie, and I think a video game requires a very different storytelling, just because of how much longer you spend enveloped in that world and in that storytelling. I think the show did a really, really good job of presenting the plot and character development and kind of hit all the beats it needed to really fulfill what the game had done. So I think I like them both pretty equally. Hmm.
I think what's really nice is that the way that it has been taken seriously, a lot of the time kind of video game to movie adaptations have been on the weaker side. There's like 1,000 Resident Evil movies and a Resident Evil show recently, which was not received well. You know, famously, the first Super Mario movie that came out in the early 90s was just this brutal thing, and it was so bad that people didn't really touch the medium again for like a generation, essentially. So the fact that this has been done well, I think people are recognizing too that video games, there is a kind of richness there, which isn't doable in other mediums, because it does kind of enwrap you and envelop you and involve you in a way that different mediums can't. And I think that's what's really interesting. And so people honoring just how much thought and effort has been put into the video game and then putting it onto the screen, and it is, it just works for me.
It really helped me appreciate actually the medium of video games, even though I wasn't playing the video game, but I could see like the depth of characters, like the, you know, the nuance and also the complexity of the plot, like all that kind of stuff. You could see like, oh, wow. Can you imagine doing this for 40 hours or 60 hours or however long it takes you to, I mean, wow, what a deep experience. So that's profound. Okay, so to catch us up, a couple of major themes, of course, in this show. One is just apocalyptic literature, really. It's the end of the world as we know it. It is people trying to survive. There's not just an airborne virus, but like a fungus. And what's interesting about this enemy, of course, is the fungi take over the human, but remain connected to all of the other taken over humans. So this is a formidable enemy that way, I found, is that not only do you have to worry about one infected human, but you have to worry that if you disturb the fungi in any human, you awaken all of the humans everywhere. And that's like a whole other level of threat, I guess.
Tension, in a way. Right?
Yeah. So I thought that the enemy was really formidable. And if the fungi wasn't trying to destroy humanity, I thought what a beautiful illustration of like a collective, collaborative sort of thing that can work together.
Like if one of us hurts, all of us hurt. If one of us needs help, we all go to help them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like outside of the whole destruction of humanity thing, there's some really beautiful pieces happening.
Yeah, and it's the opposite of what happens when humans are in trouble in all apocalyptic literature, is that everyone's out for themselves. You know, it's like survival of the fittest and forget you, I'm out of here. And they're fighting all the time over territory and weapons and... So I just thought that's interesting. The enemy they're fighting against is so powerful because it's working as one. Mm. And humans are not surviving because they're not. So I thought that's almost pre-storyline, but I thought that was an interesting part of what they're fighting.
I've really, just enjoyed so much of that. And we see that even in the first episode where society kind of begins to crumble and there's already kind of people looting and people shooting each other, just how quickly things go downhill and just how quickly, kind of humanity starts to eat itself rather than the fungi, which keeps on spreading and spreading and spreading. So
you have a couple key characters. And so remind me of who they are again, Zion, I forget their names.
So Joel, the main character, is like the grizzled survivor. Who's not the best person at the start of the show. And Ellie, who is the other main character, kind of the important daughter figure.
And kind of the savior in a way. Like she's sort of the one that could save humanity. So she gets bitten and then survives, doesn't get infected. So they realize, oh, she has immunity. And so her blood... I guess, or her brain, it turns out, has the recipe for a cure, or at least for some sort of inoculation for humans to survive this thing. So she's kind of this like hero. I loved her. She's an anti-hero. She's a classic anti-hero in that she's just this kid, really, and not even that likable of a kid in some ways, which I actually really loved about her character, is that she was quirky. She wasn't super like good looking. Like it'd be so easy to put somebody in there that's just like perfect and winsome and easy, you know, like super. And she wasn't any of those things. She's quirky. She's awkward. She's a little bit jaded. She's wounded. She's a survivor. She's pretty negative in a lot of respects, right? Like she's not always positive, but she becomes, yeah, she's cynical, right? Which I think is impossible not to be at this stage in humanity's survival.
Cynicism, yeah.
Yeah.
She came by that cynicism, honestly.
Yeah, so she's one character. And then she gets stuck, really, with Joel. And Joel's this other, well-described there, Zion Grizzly. One of the things about Joel I think that's interesting is that in the first episode or two, it shows the beginning of this thing where everybody's dying and or like everybody's going crazy. And Joel and his daughter, and it shows, it spends a whole first episode on how that relationship matters a lot to him. And his brother survive. But then actually she ends up getting shot by a human, not by the fungi.
Like, I can't gush over this. Like even, I mean, I say this with like books as well. Read the first chapter. If you don't like it, throw it away. Like watch this first. If you're at this point, watch the first episode and you're kind of umming and ahhing, watch that first episode. And then if you decide, man, I'm really going in for this, then pause the podcast for now. Watch the other 8 episodes. Have your mind blown. Yeah, even that first episode, I thought this is better than most movies, honestly. Like the kind of the character development is beautiful. Everything is shot wonderfully. I cannot get enough of this show. I kind of want to watch it again already.
Yeah, and I would say like the complexity of it even from the start. So that's, I guess, part of what you mean is that like it's not even this like fungi enemy that has killed his daughter. And so he's mad at them. He's mad at the world. Yeah. And he's mad at humans and he's mad at systems. Cause I think it's a cop, isn't it? That ends up killing his daughter.
Like a military or SWAT.
A military person, like right.
Peacemaker of some kind. Yeah.
So his pain and jadedness is actually against basically everybody. Like he just kind of hates the world and kind of hates that he survived in this world, even though because his daughter didn't. So he's just kind of reluctantly alive in a way. Kind of seems to care for nothing. He's become a mercenary. So he's just pretty dead inside. You see a lot. There's a lot of, if you don't like excessive violence, this probably isn't the show for you. But he just literally just kills everybody without emotion, doesn't care. You know, all of his responses are sort of deadened. He's really just this kind of like dead human in a way, but surviving. And he's very good at it. He's very good at violence. He's very good at surviving. And so here he is. He's kind of reluctantly forced into a relationship, not really a relationship, but he ends up having to take this girl across the earth to a place that might be able to harvest her blood, is what he thinks, for a cure for humanity. So that's kind of the premise of the show. This like dead, violent, extremely emotionally unavailable, hurting guy who takes this quirky, cynical, jaded girl on this journey to try to get her. And they, of course, they have to travel through all of these obstacles and terrible tragedies. And like, they're just basically trying to survive in some sense, in the hope of maybe saving humanity.
I think, I love how this is paced. So there's a kind of a few different beats throughout the series. So it kind of begins and you think it's going to be the kind of Joel's partner and Ellie, Joel's partner and Ellie, the three of them kind of escaping through, and then things kind of go wrong there quite quickly. And what's interesting is to say there are these kind of story beats and breaks. And so episode 3 goes from this quite kind of explosive finish in episode 2 to a much more gentle episode, a love story actually in episode 3, which I think longtime listeners will be well aware of my inability to process emotions and refusing to cry anything ever. But I nearly like welled up on this third episode. Like that was tough to watch, which is the story of a man who's kind of, again, totally shut off from the world. And then another man kind of stumbles onto his property, and initially he's very kind of skeptical, but they kind of come together and then begin this beautiful relationship we see and see it all the way through. And towards the end of the episode, again, I'm not doing this episode justice because I really think it's one of the most fantastic episodes of television ever made. And at the end of it, they kind of decide to end their lives, actually, which again is this really hard ending. I turned to my girlfriend at the end of it. I'm like, is this a happy ending? I don't know. And she's like, I don't know if it's a happy ending. Like, I don't. And she's like, well, it's the happiest ending they could hope for. I'm like, well, I guess that's true. But I was just like, I was so broken. Like, and then I spent like hours reading up about this episode afterwards. But again, raises all these kind of questions about like intimacy in the midst of tragedy and like, what does it mean to kind of honor one another? And I think there's just so many wonderful moments in that episode.
I love the glimpse of like the opportunity to love well and live well in the midst of constrained, like I love that idea that like in the middle of this apocalyptic, like all we're thinking about is surviving. There's this space. So even within the construct of the show, but also in the characters' lives, there's this space they found of creativity. You know, it begins with piano playing. Eating well, you know, so this idea of like dining in style, and then really truly loving each other. And there's art. I think at the end he's trying to paint, right? Like, so you can see them trying to go like there's room in this series and in the midst of all of this apocalyptic, like the world's going to hell in a handbasket. And in the middle of that, there's love, there's relationship, there's beauty, there's creativity. There's music, there's a relationship, you know? So that's its own, that's a theme in our lives too, isn't it? No matter how bad the world gets around us, there's room to love. There's room for beauty. There's room for creativity. There's room for music. You know, there's room to celebrate each other. That's a very beautiful theme.
It's also like, they're not just surviving. They're also taking that time to like live as well. Right? Which is, I think, another big, kind of apocalyptic theme that gets presented a lot is everyone struggling so hard to just keep on surviving and surviving and surviving. They do all these horrible things, betraying like everything. And I think that episode was a great presentation of that. You also need to live, you know? And I think a lot of that is enjoying, taking the time to do your hobbies. Do you remember the just sheer joy when they managed to grow some strawberries?
I was about to say, yeah.
Beautiful, right? I think they've really showcased that well.
Yeah.
There's a part where the character is called Bill, who's played by Nick Offerman, who, as I say, I think deserves to win all the Emmys for this role. And he says, there's a line where I was never scared before I met you. And he doesn't mean he's scared of the person. He's just like, I had nothing to lose before I met you. Mm-hmm. And now I'm scared. Because actually losing you, there's another line where his partner says, like, I don't like being old. And he says, I like old. Old means we're still here. There's just these like beautiful moments in that. So here's an interesting thing. I don't know if we're supposed to be talking about this, but Zahn, have you played the video game through?
Not personally, but
So in the video game, these characters, so in the show, there's this, yeah, two beautiful characters in this wonderful relationship. In the show, it turns out they've hated each other, and we just find Bill's partner's body and with a note saying, like, I've always hated you. It's just, like, so brutal. It's so interesting. Like,
what do you mean, in the video game it's like that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, so and then in the TV show, it's this beautiful, loving relationship.
They completely changed it. Yeah, which, again, is this interesting shift, right? And I guess they decided that they could kind of, they could develop the story better. It was more interesting. The note that his partner leaves him is just this brutal, like, I'm gonna die, but it's better than being with you kind of thing. Like, is that awful? Which is such a stark juxtaposition and again, a lot more in line with kind of how we'd expect things to go in a space like that, which I think is less interesting and less creative in a way. Whereas this, we see such an incredible and beautiful humanity in that relationship with one another. Mm-hmm. I just can't think of a relationship that's been done better on screen. And it's only one episode. So I would say even, you know what, you don't, you could just watch episode three just as a standalone. Like, I don't think you'll appreciate it as much, but if you just want to watch like this wonderful love story in a weird context, that's the one to watch, I think.
And I think part of the change from the game to the show was to use those two characters' relationship as kind of a reflection of Joel and Ellie's relationship. And I think that's something you can kind of see multiple times throughout the show, also with the superhero kid and his brother, and so on and so forth. But I think it's really just to explore kind of their reflections on Joel and Ellie's relationship. But especially by the end, I think you can really see that slow development of father-daughter bonding relationship there, family. And I think that is probably the leading reason.
Actually, Zion, that's interesting to me because I think that because Joel actually has a relationship with these guys. He went and visited them and has seen the way that they live and the way they love each other. And when they flash back to that scene, he doesn't really like them and they don't really like him because they don't trust him and he doesn't trust them and all that kind of stuff. But I think it is, that's when he starts making room for the possibility that you could love, that you could be in a relationship. So there is that sense. And I think that's also a cool theme, is that when you do give yourself to the work of love, right, of growth and beauty and celebration and welcome even, it rubs off. Like, it begins to actually break through some of the hardness of survival, some of the like tit for tat living, like some of that. And I think you're right. So that relationship and that other, you know, relationship start to open, it seems like start to open Joel to the possibility that maybe he could live again. Like, maybe he could give himself to love. And we start to see this slowly. There's a cracking in his veneer. And then I think because of the way Ellie is sort of this relentless, spunky, you know, she's cracking jokes all the time, but she doesn't require a lot of emotional energy. You know, she doesn't demand it or require it, but she keeps kind of just chipping away at this.
She kind of grows on him like a fungus.
She begins to just chip away, and then you start to see him open and almost like allow himself to care about her in a different way than he was just sort of seeing this as a functional job. And then he starts actually caring about her. And then that caring about her actually makes space for her then to care for him. And then as she cares for him, so she actually ends up saving his life. And he has already saved her life several times, but she saves his life at great risk to herself. And that's kind of when the deed is done. Like, when they actually have decided now together that they want to be together, you know, that they love each other, and daughter, father is the relationship that they're modeling there.
Your backyard plus a tiny house equals a better world. We envision a world where deep needs are met through flourishing communities, offering peaceful hospitalities and practicing sustainable stewardship. We believe in this world that there is more than enough, where the solutions to our collective needs are found within our own capacities, where belonging and sharing are living solutions that help us all. We believe we don't have to let fear lead us. Go to imbihomes.org for more information.
One organization, a new one that I really want to call your attention to is Imbi Homes, imbihomes.org. Imbi is in my backyard.
I've heard of NIMBY, not in my backyard.
Yes, NIMBY's quite popular actually, which is like nobody wants this to happen. Whatever this is, housing or whatever it is, no one wants it in their backyard, but we have a different solution.
Tell me about that solution, Danielle.
So it's a tiny house movement. Some churches are doing this as a church community, saying like, hey, our backyard could be a place for affordable housing. And then also some people, individual families with backyards, are opening their backyards. And there is, I believe, a movement afoot.
and we would like to invite you to be part of that movement. So what would radical hospitality in a dignified, beautiful, inclusive, mutual way look like? Go to mbhomes.org. There's a free training system there that if you wanted to have a look at five building blocks of MB and you begin to actually just be curious about what would it mean to live differently, try that. You can contact the MB team and you can begin a journey that might be the solution to one of the most pressing needs right now in major cities across the Western world.
And the MB team are some really lovely folks, so you should absolutely reach out to them.
Yeah, that will be the change you want to see. It might work. It's worth a shot. We have to believe it will.
Yeah, and that's another thing I think that is done well. It doesn't feel entirely rushed. And I say I could have had more episodes of this and been very happy about it. The closest thing I have to complaining about it is how quickly it ended, actually. It felt like there was this lots happening, but also a kind of richness to the relationship. And we got to the final episode. I'm like, they have got to fit a lot into this final episode, which they do, in fairness. I'm not disappointed with the payoff. We probably need to talk about the ending, right?
Let's talk about the ending in a second.
All right, okay.
Are there any other redemptive themes that you think are worthy of mentioning? So this is God at the Movies. So any themes in that show that you think, you should pay attention to this or maybe discuss this?
I think there's foreshadowing of the ending when we see so Sam and his Henry, so the two... the man and his brother, they later on in the series, they arrive at this city that's kind of, so throughout it, there's these kind of peacemakers or law keepers, and they're a bit corrupt in lots of places. And so they come to this city where they've just been overthrown. There's kind of been a revolution, and then the people have taken over and they've sent the guards packing. But as a result, there's now this kind of militia, and this is real revenge-driven idea. The people that were being very oppressed, but they were so fixated on violence that they're fixated on the collaborators. And so we come across, the story that we come across is this man and his brother, and this man had given up information about some of the rebels to the oppressors in exchange for medicine that kept his brother alive, which, you know, people were quite sympathetic towards, but some people weren't. And so as a result, they've become very fixated on revenge. And actually that revenge, blankly, ends up killing everyone, right? I think that's a really interesting theme there, that if people had been able to forgive in that space, actually, all of them would have survived. Yes. And if they, but vengeance is such a, you know, it drives people so hard, I suppose. I thought that was an interesting piece. And again, I think there was a good humanity to all of these characters. I like it when they kind of blur who's good and who's bad. It's like, well, you know what? He was bad to inform on them, but also you should do anything you can for your family. But then you should also remember the evils that have been done to your family. You know, it's, right. I think it, so we get into like, what is the right thing to do? So is the right thing to do protect your brother? Is the right thing to do? So I did philosophy my undergrad, and so I like kind of like spending time in this place and be like, okay, like what is the moral decision here? And again, that kind of plays out a few times throughout the show, and we kind of see what is the right thing, what is the wrong thing, and sometimes it's not easy, and I think that's good to bear in mind as well. I like the idea of, if we recognize that these decisions aren't easy, usually it means we can be a bit more generous towards people that think differently to us. If we think that there's only one way and it's very simple, that means we're less likely to be empathetic to people that don't feel the same way as us. I think this show does a good job of showing, like, actually, all of these people had good reasons for doing what they did. Unfortunately, those things conflict.
I liked, too, that the sorry, Zion, you got to jump in here. I liked that the gender roles weren't normative. Like, so... The woman that was like super violent and refused to forgive was a woman who was like in charge of the army now. And the guy that was forgiving and kind to his brother was a guy. Like, I like the way that they just played around with that too. I thought that was good. Yeah. Go ahead, Zed.
I think the theme you were talking about of what is the moral choice, almost like the trolley problem, almost.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I think that's one that absolutely plays out. I think it's actually the main kind of philosophical question they want you to think about in every single group of people they encounter and decision that's made, right? Because that it completely plays out with the cult and like what they're doing, and then also with the ending decision, which we'll get to.
Mm.
Well, talk to me more about the cult, because I think that's a theme you should look for. So obviously God at the movies.
Yes.
Again, it's and a little bit, it's yeah, too bad that the religious people they meet are a cult. shocker. But also the guy specifically that's in charge of the religious people is like gross in all the ways you might expect a cult leader to be gross. So he's obviously lying. He doesn't actually believe what it is that he says that he believes. Mm. He's abusing girls, including trying to abuse Ellie. And they're actually killing their own people and eating them, but he's not telling anybody. So they don't know, but they're cannibalizing people to survive, I suppose.
And they call it venison. And I'm going to say, as someone who likes venison, it's kind of ruined venison for me.
Yeah, so keep that in mind. And then Ellie, great scene where Ellie's like, oh no, 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 you picked the wrong girl, and just refuses to comply, even if it means she's going to die. So she just kind of fights back, which is one of my favorite scenes.
She really goes for it. Again, that's an interesting. So in the video game, guess who's been paying too much attention to this? In the video game, Joel is the one who actually kind of stops that situation from happening. I'm trying to remember exactly how.
Yeah, so
there you go. Take it away.
In the show, she's like, she gets onto him and stabs him a bunch of times, right? And then she gets up, kind of walks away. She's out in the open, and then Joel is there. In the game, he's there as she's killing him. And he kind of pulls her away and is like, no, it's okay. Instead of like after everything's done. So I think you could say that maybe it gives more agency to the character. Mm. I think there's kind of two different ways you can play it. It gives more agency to Ellie, but it also, I think, kind of not cements, but it kind of helps their father-daughter relationship when he gets there in the game, I think. You know, there in the moment when everything's kind of much more intense.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's all these themes, all these redemptive things going on, all these sort of philosophical moral questions, all this complexity of characters in development, and then the end. The end. Just because they want to mess with your head. And this bothered me so much. I could not believe the end of this show. Guys, I think I need therapy now. I mean, what happened? So... And again, it's this, you're left with this moral dilemma because you get why, but then also you're like, why? So the whole thing is premise. This whole show is premise with like the best decision for humanity versus the decision for the thing right in front of you. Right. So it's like the big picture or the personal one. So that's kind of the premise. I would say that's one of the major things going on through the whole show. And then the end, they finally get to a place where they can, where Ellie is invited into what he thought was going to be harvest her blood, like take her blood. But then it turns out that he discovers that it's in her brain, actually. And to get anything that will cure, and this is the possibility of a cure. So to get anything that might possibly turn into some sort of a cure, they have to take it from her brain, which means she's going to die. But they don't tell Ellie that because they said they didn't want her to go to sleep and die knowing that. Like, they just were like, we're just going to put you to sleep.
I was going to say, it's a bit weird you said they invite her in, right? They knocked her and Joel out, sedated Ellie, and then took her to the hospital to have the operation done.
But so she did watch.
She had any agency in actually sacrificing her life potentially.
Well, except that they had had those conversations ahead of time and she had said to Joel, I want to do this.
Yeah, but that is in the context of not necessarily dying. It's in the context of, I would like to try and help save the world. I think her lack of agency in the entire episode regarding that situation is a really important plot point.
Yeah, I just felt like she had already given her agency because he had said, let's stop here and not do this. Because I think there was always a premise that she could die doing this. And she had said to him, I want to carry on, even if it means death, because I want to try. So I felt like she had already made her wishes known to Joel. Now, maybe not those people, but I felt like he already knew that she wanted to give her life if it meant it for the sake of trying to save humanity. But anyway, so then these people knock her out. They take her, they put her to sleep, and he finds out that they're going to harvest basically a section of her brain, which is going to kill her. And he like goes crazy and basically kills everybody. He kills everybody, right? He kills like the doctor.
He leaves some of the nurses alive.
Oh, how kind of him. So he goes crazy. He kills the doctor, kills the, you know, person that cares about Ellie the most, who's the one that like rescued her as a baby. And then the last scene is Ellie waking up. And Joel says to her, and she said, what happened? Like, and Joel said, oh, it turns out it turns out they have tons of people like you and they can't get it to work. So they didn't need you anymore. And that's kind of what he says to her as they drive away.
I think it's, yeah, this poses just so many fascinating questions, right? So one of the nuances, so the trolley problem, as I remember it, and I could be wrong because it was a while ago, but one of the things about the trolley problem is it right to do, if you do nothing, you're going to hurt a lot of people, but if you make a decision, you're going to hurt one person? That's kind of the idea. But so that's more a question about whether it's better to, but the thing is, if you do nothing, you haven't done anything, right? So you're not responsible for those deaths. Whereas if you make the decision that will only kill one person, you're then making a decision that will definitely choose someone. So is it better to make a decision that will harm one person or not make a decision that will harm lots of people? That's kind of one of the nuances of the trolley problem. What's going on in there is what we call utilitarianism, which is what's the greatest good for the greatest number? And lots of ethicists think this way, and lots of people think this way, even if they don't kind of realize that they do, because on the face of it, it makes a lot of sense. Of course, we should be thinking about what is the greatest good for the greatest number. That's just a good thing to live by, surely. The problem is that it does relegate the individual in a way that I think could be problematic. So in a utilitarian world, it's absolutely the right thing to kill one person to harvest their organs and keep 7 other people alive. But the problem is that you then have to start killing people, which isn't okay. And that's kind of what's going on at the end there, too, I think. We're like, okay, the utilitarian thing is, of course, that Ellie's, you know, miracle cure should be used to make things better. But at what cost? And when does it become okay to kill people? What justifies it? And I think I felt this way for a long time, and the more and more I got into Jesus, the more I couldn't find myself justifying things that way. I think when we look at, I'm bringing in Jesus now, it's God in the movies, I can do that. I think Jesus never treats human beings as a means to an end. It's just not in his character and not in his actions and not in his words. Jesus treats humans as ends in themselves. So he doesn't use them to like get something. He's just fully present in that moment. And I think if that is the way that kind of Jesus models the behavior, I don't know how much choice we have. And that becomes really difficult and it is problematic. And as I said at the start, the point is here that there isn't a clean answer. There isn't an answer in which, frankly, people don't get hurt. There isn't an answer in which people aren't left behind. There isn't an answer in which everyone's autonomy is observed and honored. So how do we live in that tension, I suppose? That's what's interesting to me.
But I think the thing that bothered me is, at least, I don't know how this is in the video game, but at least in the show, it seemed to me that Joel made the decision on behalf of Ellie for himself.
Oh, totally.
I mean, it wasn't for her. It was for him. He needed her. He said that over and over again. I need her for me. So in essence, those people are using her for humanity, but Joel's using her for him. And all of them are not respecting her agency. I mean, literally, the answer to the dilemma is to say, Ellie, this is what we have to do. And are you wanting to be part of this process? Because if you are, we'll receive your sacrifice as a sacrifice you made and you chose, instead of tricking you and lying to you. And then also Joel needs to respect her wishes to do what it is she wants to do with her body and with her life and with her blood and with her brain. But instead, he shuts that agency down too, so that she can't even make a decision that is, I want to stay with you. And so everybody's refusing to allow a young girl to make her own decision, which I thought, isn't that the truth? Like, just let the woman decide for herself and she can make the decision. So I think that lack of agency was huge for me too, Zion. I was so ticked off with Joel at the end of that. I was just like, I do not like this man now.
I think it's so hard as well, right? Because we see at the beginning of that episode, there's this kind of, there has been a kind of shift for him in the kind of effort that he's making. You know, at the start of the show, he's calling her cargo. Like, that's how he sees her. You're just a package I got to get from A to B. And then he just, it's almost, I was interesting as there are moments where I think it's almost too on the nose. It's like, yeah, we get it. Like, they love each other. He especially loves her and she's damaged from all the trauma that's gone on, but loves him as much as she's able to in that space. And he sort of says, you know, yeah, I tried to take my life and, you know, and why not? There's nothing to live for. And you are the reason I don't feel that way. So I thought there was something beautiful in that kind of, and maybe that's something to say. I felt in a show that, don't get me wrong, the show isn't subtle, but I think it's multifaceted, which is wonderful. But maybe there's something just like, maybe we just need to be overt about how we feel about people from time to time. You know, the number of people we hear from that just regret the last conversation they had with someone, or they regret the things that they could have said and everything. And I know that feels like possibly that's a reminder for me. Like, what does it look like to really kind of communicate our rawest feelings with people in a way that allows them to see how much we care for them and how much we value them? How do I, like, my girlfriend's really, really good at doing that because she knows I need that. And I am not as good at that because I see her as wonderful and strong and competent and just doing her own thing. And kind of things like that remind me, I'm like, oh, actually, I think we need to be better at making those things. And again, looking at the way that Jesus is so explicit so much of the time with people, that Jesus knows exactly how he feels. And we're recording this in the week leading up to Easter, and Jesus talking and calling his disciples friends. Like, that's just a thing that he does. Like, know that you're my friends, know that I love you. What does it look like to be explicit with just how deeply we care for people, and do we need to do that better?
Yeah. Yeah, especially when he calls his friend Satan and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, he doesn't miss his words. Like.
He just tells the truth, man. Zed, any last thoughts? The Last of Us, sorry about the spoiler ending, guys, but we did give you lots of warnings.
We gave you so many warnings.
Okay, thanks for joining us on this and, well, provoking me to watch this. Listen, if anyone wants to do some work for next podcast, it's going to be on the Oscars. It's going to be on the best pictures. It won't be nearly as in-depth as this. It'll just be like a quick run-through of the top best picture nominees for the Oscars. And there's interesting themes in all that, too. Fascinating times in which we're living. Lots of social commentaries and craziness, both in real life and on the screen. So it'll be interesting. Does art imitate life, or does life imitate art? That's the question.
And you get to watch some great movies. I mean, that's some pretty good homework right there.
Yes. Also, by the way, a big shout out to Hannah McNeely, who is doing discussion guides for each of these shows, movies, and stuff. So that if you want to listen to this podcast as a leader and you're doing a group and you want to watch the movie and then have a discussion, we'll have that all for you on this podcast because, well, it's fun, and maybe it'll equip you to bring your brain and your soul and your spirit with you to the movies to hear God. Who knows?